Welcome to the Nourish, Eat, Repeat podcast, helping people who want to improve their health and change their mindset around food so they can live the life they were designed and called for. I am your host, Adrienne Delgado, and in this podcast, I'll give you step-by-step action plans to reach your health goals, as well as my favorite recipes I know you and your family will enjoy. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Nourish, Eat, Repeat. So I hope you had a fantastic week. I know we're doing all right. Another kid is sick again. That kid is Bella. Might as well not even try to hide it. Bella's sick again this week. She's home for another 2 days. Just not feeling great. I'm not sure what is going around. She was sick 2 weeks ago, and then Ben didn't feel well. All of them had fevers at some point, but now, I don't know. Different viruses are going around, and we're trying to hold it together here. But she's doing better today, so that's the good news. Speaking of Bella, I don't know if any of you struggle with this in your own home. Now, let's be clear. Bella is 12. All right, so let's put that into context here. But a situation happened this week, and I'm curious to know is if you struggle with this as well. So we have to go to the bus stop at 8:18, and my girls still want me to go with them to the bus stop, which is right outside our house, and I will go out with them for as long as they invite me. Because, of course, they're the last, and I know once that's over, it's just another chapter ending. So I try to get them out to the bus stop at 8:16, you know, just to give us some wiggle room. And we did a great job the first three marking periods, and we are just failing miserably quarter four, right? Like, we are literally running out of the house as the bus is pulling up, and this is just the best we can do. But anyway, going back to the story, we need to be at the bus stop by 8:18. And 3 days ago, it is 8:14, and I see Bella taking out her shoelaces from her sneakers. I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm going to wash my shoelaces right now. Now, one would think that if she's deciding to wash her shoelaces 4 minutes before the bus comes, 2 minutes before we're supposed to be walking outside, that clearly this girl has gotten everything else together. But you would be wrong, because she has not eaten breakfast. She doesn't even have her backpack together or her lunch ready. But she is washing her shoelaces at 8:14. So I am calmly yet firmly saying, hey, Bella, this is not the time to be washing shoelaces, right? Like, you have to get your other stuff done first. Right? This is so low on the priority list. Meanwhile, that girl has a bowl of soapy water ready to go. And she's like, Mom, chill. Like, what's your problem? I'm like, what's my problem? You haven't done anything you're supposed to do. Like, there's an order of operations. We need to first get our backpack together, eat breakfast. And then if there is any time left over, then we wash shoelaces. But instead, she's all angry at me because I'm trying to control her. And I mean, my girls, they have a gift in gaslighting, in making me think that I'm wrong for asking them to do things in a correct order. So anyway, just curious if any of you are struggling with your kids and getting them to do things, the priorities first, because I am failing miserably over here. So I welcome all your suggestions. Maybe I just need to make a chart and say, listen, these are the things that you need to be done first before anything else. Where I'm struggling is the everything else would not even occur to me to write down on a piece of paper. Like, I could write down, make sure you get backpack ready, get your breakfast, get your lunch. Never in my wildest dreams would I have to think to put washing shoelaces would go on a secondary priority list. But yet here I am. So anyway, curious if any of your kids are washing shoelaces 4 minutes before they're out to the bus. All right. I am not here just to talk to you about shoelaces, though. I do want to talk a little bit about relationships. All right. This is based off of a study, a recent study that was done at Brigham Young that had over 300,000 participants. And what they were looking at is what are the most important determining factors on people's health outcomes. All right. And interestingly enough, they found that having healthy social ties, healthy relationships, is actually the most important determining factor on people's health, like in terms of how long they were going to live, their lifespan, their health span, more so than obesity or smoking. It caused a 50% reduction in all-cause mortality. So what that's saying is having healthy relationships is a huge driver of our own health, where we would think it would maybe be doing the healthy behaviors or having a healthy BMI. It's actually having healthy social ties. And so the question is how are your relationships? Do you have good, strong relationships? If this is a big determining factor, then maybe this is something we want to put some effort into, right? It's also saying, hey, our relationships, not only do they impact our health outcome, but they also determine what foods we're eating, our exercise habits, our mental health. Like, I forget what the saying is, like, show me the people you hang out with the most, the five people you hang out with, and I'll show you your future. We are social creatures. We require input and connection from others. So of course it makes sense that the people we're surrounding ourselves with are going to influence and impact our health. You know, Jim and I have a conversation during body composition screen. So if you're not sure what that is, it's we use in-body testing in our office to look at not only a person's weight on the scale, but what's going on the inside of their body, their muscle mass, their body fat, their hydration status, their symmetry. We know that sometimes when it comes to nutrition, changes in the body occur inside before they occur outside, meaning scale weight. And so this is just a tool that we allow our clients to utilize to measure progress. If that's something you're interested in, then you just go to bodymetricshealth.com and let us know that you would like to get a body comp done. Most of our clients, it's included in their sessions with the dietitian. So if you've been thinking about talking to somebody and think this information could be helpful to you, you just want to go ahead and schedule an appointment. You can do that right online through our scheduler. But going back to the main reason I told you this, is Jim and I often have a conversation when we're doing these body composition screens and we're sitting in the room with the client. Jim will always offer this service to the client's spouse. Or he's like, hey, you should get your partner to come in and they can get this done too. And sometimes I'm like, Jim, why are you talking about this person's spouse or partner? Right? Like the person's in the room. We should make the appointment about the person in the room. And he always counters with, yeah, but we know when that person has more support at home and everybody is working towards a common goal, that person will be more successful. And he's not wrong, right? How much easier is it to be healthy when everybody in the house also has a shared goal? I mean, I hear it all the time in the office. You know, maybe some woman will come in and she's like, oh, just if only my spouse ate healthier or my boyfriend ate healthier, then I would eat healthier. But it's so hard to make good choices when he's always eating ice cream at night. And you're right, it is hard. Harder. Not impossible, but harder when everybody else around you is making the opposite decision. All right. But I'm not saying that it's impossible. In fact, you're responsible for you, just like they're responsible for them. And yes, when everybody is working towards a shared goal, it is a little easier because you have accountability from those around you helping you make the decisions that you want to make. I get that. But having healthy relationships with the people around you is just as important to your health as making the hard decisions, right? Because again, we're social creatures. We have a hormone in our body called oxytocin. And oxytocin's associated with trust and relationship building. And what's really interesting is oxytocin counters cortisol, which is the stress hormone. So when we can reduce stress levels, even through building and raising oxytocin levels through our positive relationships with those around us, it can actually decrease our stress levels, which makes sense because when we talk about emotional eating and we talk about ways to decrease stress, right? You know, what are alternatives to eating? It's calling a friend. It's play with a pet. It's, you know, go for a walk outside with somebody. You know, it's when we have those strong social connections, of course we feel better, right? It does reduce our stress level. You know, there was a study that showed 60 to 80% of all doctor appointments are related to stress. Related to stress. At what point are we going to acknowledge that this is a problem? Right? Stress is the silent killer. You can't see it, but you can feel it. There is absolutely some visceral response in your body when you feel stressed out. I usually tell my clients, look for it in the chest region. If you're not sure how stress presents itself in your body, look in the chest region first. That's usually where most people will find it. Right? So we just want to make a couple notes about, you know, how do we strengthen the relationships around us so that we can reduce our stress levels? Because ultimately, our cultural beliefs and how we interact with others impacts our health. I was reading about this one culture. It says that this one culture believes that if they don't move, they will die. Isn't that interesting? They truly believe in their heart of hearts that if they stop moving, they will die. Well, that couldn't be any further from how Americans feel. Most of us don't share that same belief system. In fact, we are looking for ways to be lazy and comfortable, right? Like, I'm really hungry, but I don't feel like getting up and getting in my car to go get myself food. So I can call Uber Eats and they will come and they'll just drop it off for me, right? We are always looking for ways to be more comfortable, to slow down. I mean, that's the message that our culture preaches. You know, work hard now so you can retire early, you know, and do nothing and just relax. You deserve it. What do you mean we deserve it? What did we do to deserve relaxing? We know that once we start relaxing, we start to die. We do, right? You know this with like older people. You'll hear people say it all the time. Like once they stopped moving around, you know, their body started shutting down more. They didn't. As soon as they stopped being active, as soon as they retired, you know, their health started to decline. Like we're not wired to relax. We're wired to move. We're wired to be in community with one another. And what if culturally we all decided that that was an important shift that needed to take place so we could do better for our kids and do better for our families. Right? We know that 60% of the American diet is highly processed. We're now craving things that aren't even food. We're craving chemical flavors. In 2018, we know that 70% of children's diets are ultra processed. And culturally, we have just accepted that as part of life. You know what? My kid only eats chicken nuggets and mac and cheese. That's it. Well, you know, it's okay because everybody else's kids are eating that too. Like, when did we decide it is culturally appropriate for processed foods to be the majority of our diets? Like, at what point are we going to take back our health culture? Because our culture absolutely impacts our health. So I want to just give you a couple things that you can do to take back your health culture in your own family's health, right? Because again, we're a product of the people around us. So what are some things that we can do to take back our health culture in our family? All right, number one, we can bring back family meals, right? Now, maybe you're doing this already, and that's fantastic. We need to bring back as many as we can. I've noticed now that my kids are older, our family meals are absolutely decreasing in frequency. Not because I want them to, just because everybody's on a different schedule. When the kids were really little and I had control over their schedule, which I guess technically I still do, you know, I'm the one that pays for all their activities. But when the kids were really little, we always ate dinner together. And studies show that when families eat together, there is a significant increase in eating whole foods. Just eating 3 meals per week led to a decreased incidence of obesity and a decreased incidence of disordered eating. Just 3 meals a week. So if that's all you can handle right now is 3 meals a week, there has been significance in 3 meals, according to research. All right. So if you have gotten a little lax on the family meals, go fight for it, because it makes a difference. That's one way that you can fight to bring a health culture back to your family. Second is, as much as possible, get back to one ingredient foods. I know it is not possible to cook everything from scratch. Our culture is not designed to allow people to take a ton of time to cook their meals, right? We just have way too many things competing for our attention that are quick and easy. But the more we can get back to one ingredient foods, the healthier our bodies are going to be. All right. So when I say one ingredient foods, we do not need to get complicated. Sheet pan meals are probably the easiest way to incorporate one ingredient foods. So I will throw on like sweet potatoes on a tray with broccoli or asparagus or carrots or cauliflower, whatever I've got, Brussels sprouts. And then I just throw the protein on top, whether it's salmon or chicken sausages or skinless chicken thighs or pork tenderloin, right? Like, I just throw the meat on top of the vegetables and the starches. But they're all one ingredient foods, and they're easy to prepare because I don't really watch them. I just throw everything in the oven and then let the oven do the work. But the more we can get back to one ingredient foods and move away from a lot of the processed foods, the healthier we're going to be. And then the third recommendation is, we need to get outside, right? You know, we may not believe that if we stop moving, we're going to die, but there is something powerful that happens when we can get fresh air and sunlight and movement, and we can put those three things together. So maybe one of your goals this week is just, can you get outside for a half an hour every day? Right? Isn't that such a fantastic way to de-stress your body, is to get outdoors and get that sunlight on your face, get that vitamin D, you know, and better yet, do it as a family, get everybody outside. I am not proud to say that I did yell at my family on Easter, because all I wanted to do was go for a family hike, and everybody was giving me such a hard time. And I mean, I played the Easter card. I'm like, we are doing this as a family and we are all going to like it. And everybody did, right? Once we got there and we started moving and, you know, we were playing around and racing and doing all this fun stuff, everybody had a great time. But it was pulling teeth to get those people in the car together. And I don't know if I didn't have Easter as my weapon, you know, to hold over them, I don't know if we would have even gotten there, because they all just were like, I want to go do this and I'd rather stay home. And oh my goodness, just get outside, people. You'll feel so much better. But I get it. We're met with so much opposition that it's just easier to let them do what they want. But we can do better. And we can start right with our families. We may not be able to culturally change the items offered in a grocery store, but we can always start with our families first and create a movement in that way. So those are your three action items. Make sure you're eating as a family at least 3 times a week. Try to get back to one ingredient foods as much as possible and spend at least a half an hour outdoors as much as you can, more times than not. All right. Okay. Let's talk about your recipe this week. This is one we've been passing out a lot in the office because it is one that a lot enjoy, and it is cottage cheese pancakes. All right. So for this recipe, really simple. You need a cup of cottage cheese, 4 eggs, and 1 cup of oats. You're going to throw those 3 ingredients into a blender and mix until smooth. And then next thing you know, you're just going to, if you have a griddle, you can spray it with some non-cooking spray. If you're going to make them in a pan, you can use a little bit of cooking spray or even a little bit of oil. Put it in the pan a little at a time and then cook your pancakes for 3 to 4 minutes on each side. And that particular recipe makes about 5 servings. All right. So try them, see what you think. A great way to get a ton of protein into your diet. It's a really easy recipe that even your kids can make it. So an opportunity for you to teach them about nutrition and be in the kitchen together. But remember, your relationships have a direct impact on your health. And so invest in them wisely. All right, guys, have a fantastic week and I'll see you next time. Take care. Thanks for listening to the Nourish, Eat, Repeat podcast. If you found this episode helpful, please rate, review, and share with others so we can reach and help more people. For more information about nutrition, how to work with a dietitian, or about any of our programs, visit our website at bodymetricshealth.com. You can also find us on socials. We're on Instagram and Facebook at Bodymetrics Health. The book Nourish, Eat, Repeat is available on our website and Amazon in both paperback and ebook versions. Once again, I'm Adrienne Delgado, and I'll see you next week.